These people are to be encouraged in their efforts and teachings so far as they disclose the true natural condition of man and the possibility of his becoming in harmony with the will of the Father in their natural love, and to that extent they are progressing beyond the old orthodox ideas of what the real man is, and what is incumbent upon him in order to get into the condition of happiness that comes with the purification of his love, and a longing, living, in harmony with the laws of God governing that purification. It is to be wished that these men will proceed in their teachings and thus give to mankind a knowledge of what man really is, and the possibilities that lie before him when he exercises the inherent powers that exist within. For concerning sin and in harmony, until the great truths of the new birth and the transformation of the soul and the wonderful kingdom of the celestial spheres are made known to men through our teachings of these things. These greater truths which lie beyond the knowledge of man at this time will not be his. In their search for God they are on the wrong track, and will never find him, if they pursue the search in the way indicated by their discourses. God is not within man, nor do they live and move and have their being in him, nor is he everywhere, waiting to be developed by men as they grow better and purer. No, they are mistaken in their thought as to God and his habitation, and will learn when they come into a knowledge of the truth, that God is not in man or in everything that surrounds him, but is separate from him and from the environments in which they live and move. And 692, the Paget Messages 1919, has his locality in the highest heavens, where he works out his purposes, and makes himself and the evidence of his existence known to men by the energies that control the universe in which men exist. He can only be seen by the soul perceptions of a soul that has been transformed into the divine angel. To men in every other particular he is unseen and unknown, except as his laws and the effect of their operation disclose his being. Well, I merely wanted to write this short message, and I am glad that you can receive it. Good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. June 18, 1919. I am here, Spencer, and want to say just a word to your friend who is so much interested in the discovery of the truths of the spirit world and of the facts that exist in that world. Well, I have been with you as you discussed these prospects, and also the writings of the men who have become converted to spiritualism, and saw that you are not satisfied with what the writings contained, and wished that these men might know the truth that they could declare it to the world. Well, you must wait content until your messages are finished and in shape to publish before these truths can be made to the world. These men who are having the experiences of which they write are doing a good work in publishing accounts of the same in this, that they are preparing the minds of their readers to accept the truth of spiritualism whenever the same shall be published. They are breaking up the fallow ground and making it ready to receive the seeds of truth as they shall become scattered over the soil that was so lately barren and unfitted to receive and nurture these seeds. The work is one that will result in much good and will gradually lead man to accept as true and coming from the spirit world, what they would not otherwise receive. I merely wanted to write this little message so that you and your friend may not think that the publications, such as you have read tonight, are worthless and without a function in causing men to believe in the lower truths of spiritualism. They are very valuable to mankind in general and to those philosophers and scientists who are more interested in the physical aspect of the study. They must be encouraged and you must not think that their appearing is merely a waste of time or effort. They are the ABCs of spiritualism and must be 693. Learned before you can expect the higher or more spiritual truths to be received. Well, I will not write more now. Good night. Your friend, Spencer. Question asked, I was a scientist when on earth and supposed agnostic, but I know better now. October 18, 1919 I am here, Jesus. Let me write a few lines for I must tell you of an important truth that is necessary for men to know in order to reach the celestial kingdom, and a knowledge of the plan of salvation. I know that the Bible contains many sayings attributed to me in reference to this plan, and many of my alleged sayings are believed in by those who claim to be Christians, which are not true, for I never said them and they are contrary to what I received from the Father as to the true plan of men's redemption from sin, and as to the only way, by which, they can obtain the true atonement with the Father and a knowledge of their own immortality. Many of these sayings were written by men who knew not the only way to a oneness with the Father, and were the results of the teachings of the manuscripts that then existed and were received by the Jews as the revelations of Moses, and of many of the prophets who had no knowledge of the divine love or of its re-bestowal upon humanity. These men made me say those things that accorded with their ideas of what was necessary to a salvation or possibility of their becoming at one with me and with the Father, and in writing their ideas confuse the truth with what they supposed was the truth, as contained in the Old Testament, and much harm has been done by attributing many of these sayings to me, because of the supposed authority that thereby attached to them. My disciples never taught, and never understood that their salvation, or that of any man, depended upon faith in me as the Son of God, or that I, the mere Jesus, had in me any virtue to forgive sin or to ensure an entrance into the true kingdom of God, or that I, as the man Jesus, was a son of God in the sense that the Bible teaches. They knew that the Father had revealed to me the truth, and that I had in me that love, which to a large extent, made me like unto and at one with the Father. That my teachings of the re-bestowal of the divine love was true, and that when they or any man should possess this love to the extent of that, the Paget Messages 1919, possession, they would become at one with the Father, and also with me, who possessed it to a greater degree than any man. I say, they knew this and taught it to the people as I had taught it to them, but when the compilers of the present New Testament came to declare my sayings and teachings, they knew not of this love, and hence, could not understand what many of my true expressions meant, and gave them an interpretation so far as my real sayings were concerned, that would comply with their knowledge. No, I am not correctly quoted in many of these sayings, and I may say in the large majority of them, for when they were written, as now contained in the New Testament, men had lost the knowledge of their true meaning, and out of their own minds recorded that which they thought was what I had really said. I do not see how these false sayings can be corrected, except to take each saying and show, by its incompatibility with what I now say, its falsity. This would take too much time and expend much energy that could the better be employed in declaring what the truth actually is. But this I will say, that whenever these sayings impart that I claim to be God, or that I could or did forgive men of their sins, or that whatsoever should be asked of the Father in my name would be received, are all untrue and has greatly misled the true seeker of knowledge of immortality. My disciples were close to me and understood better my sayings than all others, and yet they did not understand all the truth, and left the mortal life with many expectations that were not fulfilled and in the very nature of the same could not be fulfilled. They were in certain non-essentials influenced in their beliefs and expectations by their training in the teachings of these Old Testament manuscripts, and were very largely Jews in belief when they died. They understood the vital things that determine their relationship to God and to their existence in the future world, but as to many of the non-essentials they retained the faith of their fathers, and were not able to receive all the truth which I could have taught them. I must not linger to correct these ill-edged sayings of mine, but must occupy my time and yours in declaring and revealing the truth, as it exists now and existed then, and you and the world may know, that wherever and whenever these Bible sayings of mine conflict with what I have written, and shall write you, they are untrue and were never said by me. Thus, in this general way, I will make plain to men that the Bible must not in all particulars be relied on or believed in as containing the truth or my declarations of the truth. I will soon come and write a message on a vital truth and hope that you will be in condition to receive it. I will now say good night and God bless your efforts and keep you safely in His care. Your brother and friend, Jesus. 694, The Paget Messages 1920 February 2, 1920 I am here, Scott. Let me write. I am your old friend, Scott, who died a few days ago. I know now what death means and how we are punished for the things done on earth, and I am suffering my share of the penalty. I come to you because you had told me on earth of the future of men who die, and I am now convinced that what you told me is true, although I know very little of what my fate here is. I only know that I am living and suffering and beyond that I do not know anything. I am glad that I can come to you and hope that you will help me, if possible. I have written Morgan and he promised to help me, and if you only knew how much I need help you would not hesitate one moment, for I believe that you are my friend. I realize that I am not in condition to know anything of the truths of religion and there does not seem to be anyone here to help me. How strange that my folks have not met me, for I believe that they must be interested in me, if any dead person can be. I am tired and must stop, Scott. February 14, 1920 I am here, Jesus. Well, my disciple, I realize that your desires are that I shall deliver a message to you tonight, and I am anxious to do so, yet I see you are not in condition that I may take possession of your brain that is necessary in order to write satisfactorily. I am sorry that this is so, but it is a fact, and we will have to wait a while longer, which will not be very long, for you are much improved, and if you continue to pray you will soon become in that soul condition that will enable me to make the rapport. There are many messages yet to be written and I am anxious that you receive them in order that they may be delivered to the world, for the world is now awakening to a greater realization of the fact that man is spiritual and must have spiritual food. The war is causing many people to think of the hereafter and the destiny of the soul, and the knowledge that the world now has of the future life is very meager and unsatisfactory, merely a knowledge that the spirit survives death and experiences more or less happiness in the spirit life. As you know, this is not the vital thing in the destiny of man, for while a knowledge of the survival of man from the death of the physical, may and does give a great deal of consolation to the near and dear ones who are left on earth, yet that fact does not, in the slightest degree, determine the condition or destiny of the soul that has left its home in the flesh, and there are no means, now known to men, to show that destiny, except some things written in the Bible which are the subjects of much speculation and controversy and want of belief. The consolation of those who have faith in the Bible is founded on that faith, or rather, in most cases, belief, but there are a number of believers in the truths of the Bible, with a conscious soul perception of their real meaning, who have that faith which makes certain to them the facts of destiny, and the possession of love in their souls. I will come soon and endeavor to write a formal message. In the meantime, let your prayers ascend with more earnestness and longings to the Father. As you know, I love you as my brother and disciple, and am with you as you pray each night, uniting in our prayers, and you must let your faith increase, and believe that your prayers are being heard, and will be answered to the fullest. I will not write more now. So my brother, good night, and may the Father bless you with his greatest blessings. Your brother and friend, Jesus. February 15, 1920 I am here, Jesus. I am here as I promised last night and will write on the subject of the incarnate soul. You may have observed in your studies of the different theories of the creation of man that always the question has arisen as to the relationship of the spiritual and physical, that is, as to the soul and the material body. I know that many theories have been set forth as to how and when the soul became a part of the physical body and what was the means adopted by the laws of nature, as they 695, the Paget Messages 1920, are called, for the lodgment of the soul into that body, and the relationship that one bore to the other. Of course this applies only to those mortals who believe that there is a soul separate in its existence and functionings from the mere physical body. As to those who do not believe in the distinctive soul, I do not attempt to enlighten but leave them to a realization of the fact when they shall have come into the spirit world and find themselves existing without such body, but really existing, with the consciousness that they are souls. When the physical body is created it has no consciousness of its having been created, for it is merely of the unconscious creations that are of the other material creatures of nature, and does not feel or sense in any degree the fact, that it is a living thing dependent upon the proper nourishment of its mother for its growth and continued life in accordance with the laws of nature, and the objects of its own creation. The father and mother, being necessary to the creation or formation of this merely animal production, know only that in some way there has come into existence an embryo thing that may eventuate into a human being like unto themselves. If this thing were allowed to remain without the soul it would soon fail to fulfill the object of its creation and disintegrate into the elements of which it is formed, and mankind would cease to exist as inhabitants of the earth. This physical part of man is really and only the result of the commingling of those forces that are contained in the two sexes, which according to the laws of nature, or of man's creation, are suited to produce the one body fitted for the home of the soul that may be attracted to it, to develop its individuality as a thing of life and possible immortality. The result of this commingling is intended only as a temporary covering or protection for the growth of the real being, and does not in any way limit or influence the continuous existence of the soul, and when its functions have ended, the soul, which has then become individualized, continues its life in new surroundings and in gradual progression, and the mere instrument used for its individualization is disseminated into the elements forming its appearance and substance. As this body was called from the elements for a certain purpose, when that purpose shall have been served, it returns to these elements. This body, of itself, has neither consciousness nor sensation, and in the beginning has only the borrowed life of its parents, and then when the soul finds its lodgment, it has only the life of the 696 soul, for the human life can exist only so long as the soul inhabits the body, and after such habitation commences, the borrowed life of the parents ceases to exercise any influence or directing force on the body. This, then, is really the true description of the physical body, and if it were all of man, he would perish with its death and cease to exist as a part of the creation of the universe of God. But the soul is the vital, living and never dying part of man, is really the man, and the only thing that was intended to continue an existence in the spirit world. It was made in the image of God, and there is no reason for its existing for the continuing companionship of the physical body. And when men say or believe that the body is all of man, and when it dies man ceases to exist, they do not understand the relationship or functioning of soul and body, and know only the half-truth which is visible to their senses, that the body dies and can never again be resuscitated. This is a determined fact and all arguments by analogy, to show that man must continue to live notwithstanding the death of that body, are not apposite and very inconclusive. All these analogous appearances only show that the objects of the analogy ultimately die, and thus fail to prove that these objects are eternal, just as much as if there had never been any change in their condition or appearance. The final demonstration is that they die, and when this analogy is applied to man, it must show that he dies also, and is no more. But the questions are asked, whence comes the soul, by whom created, how does it become incarnated in man and for what purpose, and what is its destiny? First let me state, that man has nothing to do with the creation of the soul or its appearance in the flesh. His work is to provide a receptacle for its coming, a mere host, as it were, for its entry into the flesh, an existence as a mortal or in the appearance of a mortal. But his responsibility in this particular is very great, for man can destroy that receptacle, or care for it so that the soul may continue in earth life a longer or shorter time. And while this receptacle is the creation of man and without him it could not be brought into existence, yet the soul is no part of his creation and is independent of the body, and after the earth life, in the spirit world, it will cease to remember that it was ever connected with or dependent upon the creation of its parents. The soul, in the spirit life, as a truth, is so separated from and associated with that body which was its home while in the earth life, the Paget Messages 19:20, that it looks upon it as a mere vision of the past and not a subject for its consideration. As has been told you, the soul was created by the Father long before its appearance in the flesh, and awaited such incarnation for the purpose only of giving it an individuality, which it did not have in its preexistence, and in which it has a duplex personality, male and female, that is needed to be separated and made individual. We, who have had this preexistence and incarnation in the flesh and have obtained this individuality, know the truth of what I have here stated. There is a law of God controlling these things that renders these pre-existing souls capable of knowing the desirability of incarnation, and they are always anxious and ready for the opportunity to be born in the flesh and to assume the separate individuality that they are privileged to assume. As men provide the receptacle for their appearing and homing, coming, as it were, they become aware of the fact and take advantage of the opportunity to occupy the receptacle, and become ostensibly a human being with the necessary result of individuality. I am glad that you are in a better condition and will continue the messages as we have been desiring to do for some time. I shall be with you and help you in every way, and hope that you will keep up your faith and prayers to the Father. Good night and God bless you. Your brother and friend, Jesus. February 16, 1920. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, the Master will not continue his messages tonight as you are not so well and he does not feel it best to draw upon you as he would be compelled to do if he were to continue, or attempt to continue, the message of last night, and so I will write you for a short time and tell you of someone here and very anxious to communicate with her soulmate. Of course I mean Mary, and she is all aquiver with excitement, as you mortals might say, at the prospect of writing to the doctor, and so I will let her come and write, but you must be careful and not let her write too long, for what she has to say would require you, in order to receive it, to write for the balance of the evening. Mary now writes, "Well, I am here and want to say a great deal, but as Helen has warned you, I will not trespass very long, and Helen does me an injustice when she said I would want to write all 697, the evening, for I am as considerate of you as is possible and notwithstanding my opportunity, I realize your capacity. Tell my dear one that I have waited a long, long time to communicate with him and that although I have the advantage of him, in that I can see what his thoughts are and know just how much he loves me, yet I also desire to tell him of my love for him, and want him to know it. He is my own true lover, and I realize that no other woman can come between him and me, even as to any earthly love that he may have, and just here let me say that I am not reflecting on you, for I know what the circumstances are in your case, and how it is best that you should have someone to comfort your last years on earth 37. But he does not need such a one, and I shall always be sufficient for him, as he is for me. Tell him that I am very happy in the knowledge that he is all mine, and that my love for him is always necessary, and that my efforts to make him happy never cease. I am now in a higher sphere than when I last wrote him, and realize what the wonderful love of the Father means more than ever, and also that with this increased love I have greater love for him. I am with him more often than he is aware of, and am pleased that he thinks so much of me and loves me as he does. His life will at the longest be very short 38, and then I shall have him with a full consciousness that no earthly pleasure or condition can ever for a moment separate us, and that the bliss which I have will be nearer his than he can imagine. I really believe that when he comes over it will not be very long until he will find his home with me, and enjoy the happiness of my home, a wonderful home, not like anything on earth, or that has been conceived of by man. No, it is beyond description, and the nearest approach to a description that he can understand is that the Father's love is in and about it in a degree that renders everything beautiful and grand. He must not despair of coming to me, for he will come as surely as the sun shall rise, and then he will know what happiness means in the experience of actual enjoyment. I am so very happy that I can. It is apparent from the Daily Diary that James Paget had another woman in his life, Ella, and that Helen was quite happy about this. See the entries for October 16, 1919. That particular message from Helen has not been published. 38 Mary Kennedy got that very wrong, unless it is simply a convoluted turn of phrase. Dr. Stone passed at age 90, on the 15th of January 1967. 37 The Paget messages 1920. Write to him tonight and encourage him with the knowledge that all these things will be his, and forever. He, I know, is not surrounded by those things which ordinarily make a man happy, but he has greater wealth than these things can possibly give him, for he has much of not only the Father's love, but the love of a soulmate who is all his and ready to give him the real true happiness that only a union with a soulmate in the celestial heavens can give. He must continue to pray for an increased inflowing of the Father's love, and as that shall come to him, I shall be able to see that the soulmate love for his Mary will increase also. I would like to write of many things that I hear in such reality and grandeur, but as you must not write much more, I must forego the pleasure. But this he must know, that my love is all his, and the many mansions spoken of by the Master will prove to him to be a reality, and not the mere hope that so many mortals rely on. I sent him a kiss, yes, many kisses, such as only angels can send, and if his soul be opened up to their coming, he will realize what it means. Good night, I thank you, and with my love to him and the assurance that I am watching over him, and sympathize with him in all his earthly worries, will sign myself his loving, Mary. Helene now writes, well dear, she has written and says she feels much better, and I know she does, for she looks very happy and grateful for the privilege. I am with Mary in her expressions of love and hope and certainty, and you must believe that these things that she has spoken of will be yours when you come to join us. Why dear, you cannot appreciate what all this means to you and to us. We are truly thankful to the Father for the privilege of knowing that we have on earth a soulmate, the very necessary part of ourselves with whom we can talk and communicate the innermost feelings of our souls. It is a privilege that not many mortals enjoy, and it is no wonder that men and women are earnestly seeking a way by which they can come into communication with their loved ones, even if these are only their loved ones for a short time. If they only knew what it means to be able to talk to a soulmate, and have that soulmate tell him of her love and the wonders of it all, they would become more anxious than ever, and the faith that they now have would cease to satisfy. But this cannot be so at this time, and it may be well that men and women generally are not fitted for such an experience. 698. You know how much I love you and what this love means, and that there is no other love in all the spirit world, except the Father's love, that can so satisfy and make happy. I must stop now, for you have written enough. But do not forget that baby is anxious to write, and you must give her the opportunity to do so before long. You will soon feel well again and be in condition to perform your work, which to you just now is the important thing. So I will say good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 27, 1920. Let me write a short time tonight as I see that you are anxious to hear from some of your friends in the spirit world. I have not written for a long time, though I have been desirous to do so, and tonight will say only a few words in reference to my progress and happiness in my condition as a celestial spirit, for I am now in the celestial heavens, and know the truth of many things that have been written you. It is a little difficult for me to recite to you the wonders of these heavens and the perfect happiness that is enjoyed by those spirits that have found their home and abiding place in the many mansions that Jesus spoke of while in the flesh. You must know that heaven is a place as well as a condition, notwithstanding the fact that so many of the spiritualists teach that it is only a condition or state of the soul. No, this is not all of the truth but is a great part of the truth, for the condition of the soul determines just what heaven it shall occupy and find its harmony and happiness in, but the all-loving Father has provided that the soul shall have a place, corresponding to its condition, in which it may live and progress. If heaven were only a state of the soul, then it would not be a real, existing thing, with the substance and reality that the soul, even in its state of bliss, must have as a necessary accompaniment to the enjoyment of what the Father has provided for its true condition of living. Heaven, as a place, is real and independent of the state of the soul, though it is necessary for the soul to be in a corresponding state in order that it may enter into this heaven and fully realize that it is a home suitable for its condition and enjoyment. If it, I mean heaven, were not a real objective and perceptible place, then the soul would be limited by its own condition that would be very narrow, as I may say, and confined to the limits of the Paget Messages 1920, its own state, and separated from the states of other souls, and without the social intercourse that makes heaven a place of such happiness and contentment. Every soul would then be in the condition of the ascetic in human life, and introspection and contemplation would be the source and only means of possible bliss, and knowledge of those things that are spoken of as beyond the heart of man to conceive of, and which are truly and certainly provided by the Father's love for the continuous and never-ending progress of the soul towards higher and greater enjoyment, would have no real, conscious existence in that soul. As man in his earth life, in which condition of the soul determines his heaven, is provided with those surroundings and material things that are intended to make him happy or miserable, so in the heavens things material are provided to enable the soul of man to better enjoy its own condition. The things of heaven are not all spiritual, as conceived by so many men, but are partly composed of the material of the universe and are so constituted and formed as to supply the desires and wishes of the soul with that which will satisfy the soul's longings for beauty and harmony and perfect enjoyment. In the several heavens are homes, real and substantial, suited to the states of the souls and differing as those states differ in their requirements. These material things are not subjective as so many mortals teach, but are objective as are things of earth, and are the objects of sight and touch and of the other spiritual senses.